Today, we are heading back to that galaxy far, far away to talk about The Empire Strikes Back. The second Star Wars movie to hit the screen, considered by many as the best of all of the Star Wars movies, this 1980 sequel takes the adventure to darker, deeper places. Breaking off family lines of destruction, exploring sacrifice and the power of faith in the face of overwhelming odds. But don't worry, we're gonna have some fun along the way, so laugh it up, fuzzball. We recommend this slightly darker episode of the Star Wars saga for families with kids around 9 or 10 years old and up. Steven, let's climb in the best twin pod cloud car, and let's go. Rocket.
Welcome to Rocket Pop Reviews, giving Christian families a reliable source for reviews of movies, shows, books, and podcasts.
Every four computers now have primary control of critical vehicle function.
We're serious about the fun of entertainment.
Nice to be in orbit.
Roger, 0G, and I feel fine.
And now your hosts, Steve Manuel and Jeff Davenport.
The Empire Strikes Back. This is the second of the Star Wars movies. We had the first one, Star Wars, or as they eventually called it, A New Hope. The Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. Empire Strikes Back, in this one, the Rebel Alliance, the good guys, they're on the run after Star Wars, after they've blown up the Death Star, and the Empire, Darth Vader and his crew, are coming after them. Han, Leia, Luke, the whole crew, they travel from an ice planet where they're having to defend themselves. Luke heads off to Dagobah where he meets this Jedi Master Yoda who trains him. And then there's all sorts of problems for Han and Leia and the robots on this other place. And Luke has to go and rescue them. And when he gets there, he has this big confrontation with Darth Vader that ends in this massive revelation that changes everything. This is the second of the three movies in this first original trilogy. Star Wars ends on an up note. Yay! Return of the Jedi ends on the biggest up note. Yay, we defeated! Empire Strikes Back ends on a bit of a melancholy note. Things aren't so great right now. I can't wait to see how they resolve things in the third movie. So that's the general plot line of The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, it's a big chase movie, right? When the Empire striking back, so to speak, is Darth Vader and his evil forces looking for the rebels, which includes Luke and Leia and the people. And this whole movie is this them chasing them down, and maybe Luke's gonna transform along the way and he'll mature a little bit, but it's about this chase.
All right, so let's talk about the craft of this movie. This movie, all of these Star Wars movies are typically called a space opera, which is a very strange little phrase.
Yes, I've heard this all of my life, space opera. And I always thought, I don't see anybody singing in it. What's the opera? Well, just to fill in a little bit, a space opera is a subgenre of science fiction. And it emphasizes space warfare with use of, I'm quoting directly here, melodramatic, risk-taking space adventures, and chivalric romance. So it's set mainly or entirely in outer space. It features technological and social advancement in faster-than-light travel, futuristic weapons, and sophisticated technology on a backdrop of, get this, this is, by the way, isn't written about Star Wars. It just happens to fit it exactly. Galactic empires and interstellar wars with fictional aliens, often in fictional galaxies. The term does not refer to opera music, thank you, I needed that, but instead originally referred to the melodrama, scope, and formulaic stories of operas. This idea was used in horse operas in the 1930s, which was a cliched formulaic Western. And then soap operas, which we know of, a melodramatic domestic drama. Space operas, like Star Wars, emerged in the 1930s, and they continued to be produced in literature, film, comics, television, etc. Most famously, Flash Gordon was 1936. That was a space opera. Again, you're getting this very big story, but there's always like a romance at the middle of it. The most successful space opera book series ever written. I bet you cannot. I wonder if you've ever heard of them, Jeff.
I don't know.
Perry Rodan.
No, never.
That's the most successful ever. And then the Star Trek series and then Star Wars kind of brought that into modern parlance or our generation, I should say.
Well, according to that definition, this is about as space operatic as it gets.
Yes.
Big, giant stakes. The stakes of the universe are there, but also this idea of heroism. And like you're saying, chivalric romance is at the core of this. And more than any of the other movies, that's really, to me, why this movie works so well. a couple things about craft. When you watch this movie, everybody always thinks Star Wars, oh, they're all directed by George Lucas. George Lucas directed the first movie, Star Wars, but then he handed it off to other people to direct because he's like, I don't want to do all the day-to-day stuff. I want to oversee things. So he got his old USC professor, Irvin Kershner, to direct this one. And the writing in this one is so good.
Yeah, can I interject here? I know who you're going to talk about, but I would just like to say one of the co-writers of the screenplay was Lee Brackett. She wrote space operas in the 40s and 50s. So George went and found her somewhere and said, do your thing with this movie. I just think that's fascinating.
He looked at this second movie and said, I need to bring in another writer. George wrote the first one along with some uncredited help. And he got Lee Brackett because he knew she wrote space operas. He also knew that she wrote The Big Sleep, which was a classic old hard-boiled detective movie, Rio Bravo. So this woman had some real bona fides. And when they got her in there, though, she was very old. I want to say she was almost 80 years old.
Wow.
And died during the writing of this. If you get real nerdy like I've done and you read some of the early drafts, it's not quite catching. It's not quite catching. They brought in Lawrence Kasdan, who was a young buck writer, and the movie is what it is because of Lawrence Kasdan's writing. I think Lee Brackett probably brought a lot of great elements. Some of the snappy dialogue from The Big Sleep, that's in here. That's really also Kasdan's forte. So watching it, I was watching it last night with my 12-year-old, and there are so many just great lines, especially between Han Solo and Princess Leia, because they have this, we don't like each other thing, but we really love each other thing. And it is just so good. There are so many great lines, especially on the Hoth ice planet as they're arguing with each other. It's well directed in those moments, but the writing is really sharp and snappy. And the whole time you have this feeling like Han's like, yeah, you like me. And she's like, I don't like you, but she really likes him. And you love that. You just feel it through the whole movie.
They'll have these scenes where they're insulting each other, and it ends with a kiss. It's kind of like you love moonlighting, right? It's kind of like that friction between the main characters.
Very fun. The plot moves right along for the most part, with one exception. When you're on the Hoth planet, you're watching, it's very exciting. It's a little war right there. And some of the special effects, especially for 1980, are really, really good. Lucas went back through and fixed some of these in around 1998 or 99 with a special edition. And some are for the better. Some is a little too much. But overall, it looks good. It moves right along on Hoth. We'll say there's really three main locations. There's the Hoth ice planet, and the last third takes place on this cloud city. That moves along really well. There's this part in the middle, and they're cutting back and forth, but there's this part in the middle, which is really important, but it's when Luke goes to this swamp planet, and he meets this Jedi Master Yoda, who's going to teach him the ways of the Force.
Jedi Master Yoda. You seek Yoda.
That stuff is good and interesting, but boy, it can feel like you're walking
slow
through that swamp. it's a little too much.
The plot starts to swamp down.
It totally does. Now, thankfully, if you're watching with a kid, thankfully they're going to cut from that to this really fun thing where the Millennium Falcon with Han Solo and Leia and Chewbacca and the droids, they're in like this asteroid field, and then they're hiding inside of an asteroid, but they come to find out, oh, they're actually inside this space worm kind of thing. So it's going to cut back and forth. But that stuff with Yoda is obviously really, really important. overall, craft on this movie is strong. It is well written. The plot overall makes sense. If you want to get nerdy and go, but what about this? Oh, I'm trying to, you can get nerdy. It'll be fine. But if you just generally go, like you said, this is a chase movie.
Yeah.
People are being chased across space. I don't know where they're headed, but this sure is interesting to me. It's totally easy to track along the way.
Yeah. Something fun to look for in this film, if you haven't seen it in a very long time, is that so much of the technology in Star Wars was absolutely groundbreakingly brand new. Like they're figuring it out the day they shot it. And they shot it, I think we got it. Did that work? And then the tape falls off and the thing falls down. Well, by the time Empire Strikes Back happens, they kind of dial in a lot of that technology. And as you said, George Lucas didn't direct the film. You know why? Because he was growing his special effects company and all of that work. There was a massive amount of work that happened here. And it just comes off as, I think they know what they're doing here. So there's a lot more like space fights, you know, mm-hmm. and you can just see, oh, this feels very, it's more refined.
Yes. It works. You're rare. There's a couple moments you might get distracted by the special effects. Oh, that looks quaint. Some stop motion stuff or some blue screen stuff that you're like, that wouldn't happen today.
Yeah.
But you get past it pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. Kids will never notice it.
Probably not. Overall, the craft is great. It works. And more than anything, it's about the plot of this. And this isn't just a space story. Where it's going is the relationship between Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. And there's obviously this very, very famous reveal at the end of this that is altogether heartbreaking. And it works. Somehow you get to that moment. And we've said this many times about older movies, and this is obviously a 45-year-old movie. These movies were groundbreaking in a lot of ways, and we're so used to them that if you're watching this for the first time, it could feel cliched.
Right.
It wasn't at the time.
Right.
We've seen some iteration, even within the Star Wars world, of a reveal like this since then. So we're a little inured to it, but the hope is that when they get to that reveal, you go, wait a minute, what? This changes everything.
Yes.
So craft, super strong. I really want to spend some time talking about messaging.
Great.
Because that's what we're passionate about here on Rocket Pop, is thinking about what messages are being communicated by a movie to an adult, to a parent, but particularly to a child. And what might you have to walk them through and go, let's watch out for this, or go, isn't that interesting? This isn't a Christian movie, and yet we agree with some of these ideas. So yep. a few I'll throw out. The first one is, there is a real emphasis in here. So when Luke gets to Dagobah and he's meeting with Yoda, you know, there's this, what could be construed as a, you know, Eastern New Agey kind of force thing. We've talked about that on Star Wars. We can talk a little bit more about that here. What Yoda is emphasizing is he's saying, look, there's more to life than what you see. This goes back to the message of the Matrix. There's more to life than just the physical, what you're seeing. Yoda in his strange Yoda talk says,
luminous beings are we, not this crude matter.
Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. And
yeah.
I think there's something, now you can go too far with this and go, look, the world doesn't matter. We are just spiritual.
Can I throw in a Bible verse that would say exactly the same thing? John chapter 6, Jesus says, the flesh counts for nothing. The spirit gives life. So that's what Yoda's saying.
That's exactly right. And he's trying to convince Luke, because Luke looks at, again, a biblical principle, is Luke looks at Yoda, who's this shrunken 1,000-year-old puppet dude, green.
Frog puppet.
More ears than muscles. And he basically looks at him and goes, you're some massive Jedi master warrior. Give me a break. Well, that's when, you know, it says about David, God looks on the inside, not on the outside.
Yes.
There are these messages. Again, they're Judeo-Christian themes that Luke
right,
has
got
a clue about. He's swimming in the water of the day. And
yes.
yet we're able to go, isn't that a beautiful thing? So I think there's a strong message here about spiritual over the physical. Anything to add on that as I go through a little list of these?
No, keep going.
The next one is trusting in something bigger. I was watching this last night, and Yoda's trying to convince Luke, don't just have a knee-jerk reaction to something that's happening. He wants to go rescue Han and Leia, which seems noble. He's saying, I need you to trust, Yoda's saying, I need you to trust me. I'm raising you up for something that's going to be even better. If you go, look, I'm going to do what comes naturally to me,
yeah,
you're going to run into big problems. And that totally happens. Totally happens. He ends up going, no, dude, I know you've taught me all sorts of stuff. I know you've proven I should trust you. I'm going to trust myself. I'm taking off. I'm going to go help. And it causes problem after problem that they have to untangle after that.
Yeah, I hope I don't step on the toes of what else you're going to say here. But as you say, Yoda is telling Luke, you have to subdue your proclivities. You have to stop what you want to do naturally. You need to pause for a moment. You need to check in with the Force. You need to kind of go to a more spiritual place and then make a decision. We said this with Star Wars, Jeff. That is such a countercultural idea in the world that we live in now, when young people are all told, do everything that comes naturally to you. Even education should be self-directed. You should be the leader in everything. Follow your inclinations. What I love watching this movie is there is a message here, which is self-control yields delicious, desirable fruit. And like, when he's going like, you don't just pop off, Luke, because you're angry. Anger is a recurring theme. You can't pop off because you're angry. You have to get control of yourself, self-control, and you have to submit yourself to something larger. What a refreshing and lovely message for our children.
Couple that with two things. What we see happen when he goes to confront Darth Vader, Luke is immature. In Return of the Jedi, he confronts Darth Vader with maturity, and the outcomes are night and day different. I love this too, that where is he getting this instruction from? He's getting it from an elder. We talked about this with Star Wars. What a strange thing. A movie, especially in the 70s, about they're just as you do. An old man is guiding him towards what's true. They double down on that in this movie. They go, yes, we're going to have a little guy who's 1,000 years old give instruction to the young buck. And then we're going to have Ben Kenobi show back up and go, you got to listen to this. Elders. They all but call them elders.
It's an excellent point. I just mentioned education. So education these days is more and more self-directed. The child will express his interests. The best that a child could do is be critical of old systems. That's the best idea. This movie says, no, knowledge exists in older people and wisdom. What a child must do is rein themselves in and sit and listen passively while knowledge comes from older generations and they receive this eternal truth in them that they could not come up with on their own. Eureka.
I just want to high five this movie. We're so used to the Star Wars movies. If you're our age or whatever, you're just used to them. It is important to look back and go, whoa, because it hasn't changed. Obviously it's the same movie since 1980. The times have changed, which now makes it more relevant or more important for us today. I love that. There's other themes in this movie. Obviously, hope in the midst of darkness, evil's deception, the power of sacrifice is huge. But one of the things that strikes me that's really hit here that is going to play out even more in Return of the Jedi, so I kind of want to just tease it here, is there is something about family lines and breaking off a family line. And that obviously comes particularly in the punchline to this movie. But one of the most mystifying moments in the movie that you'll just have to prepare your kids for, talk with them through it, because it even as an adult, it doesn't quite make sense. Luke's on Dagobah. As I've gotten older, it's become one of my favorite moments. Luke's on Dagobah. He's getting training, and there's a spot nearby, kind of in a cave, which is that's very Joseph Campbell going into the cave to confront something. He's like, I'm going to go in that cave. There's something weird there. And Yoda goes, okay, just watch it. And so Luke puts on his weapons and he's like, you don't need weapons. And Luke's like, I'm bringing my weapons. He goes down in there. All of a sudden, it's like this dreamlike state. And this isn't possible, but Darth Vader walks in and he's like, okay. And so he fires up his lightsaber. It's not really Darth Vader. It's like this hallucinogenic state.
Yeah.
And they fight for a moment. And Luke, it's not gross or anything. He cuts off Darth Vader's head. Boom, head falls down. And then the front of the mask, Darth Vader's mask, blows off out of nowhere. And Luke looks down. And what's inside the mask? Luke's own face. Luke doesn't talk about it afterwards. He's clearly unsettled.
Shook.
It's a total shock to him. But it's teasing what's to come later. But it's such a cool moment of... it's setting up what the family line is and where things are going to have to go in Return of the Jedi. It's a confusing moment, but it's a powerful little moment.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing. There's this. We talked about in Star Wars that George Lucas went into the most ancient sources that he could find to find what are the stories that resonate with people. He's a young man. He wants to make movies that matter. It's something that'll be a touch point for his generation. So he goes and researches very ancient things. And so you have this. There's a level that is like that is spiritual. He's wanting to make spiritual commentary. Mm-hmm. And this scene with Luke facing his greatest enemy and then he's comes to a realization. I think what that one thing that scene says is, I'm my greatest enemy. I always thought it was this other person, mm-hmm. but when I go off in anger and think, I'll just kill him, I'll cut his head off. And he realizes that, oh, it's me. I'm the problem I have to deal with. Again, that's a very Christian message, right?
I agree. I couldn't agree more. It's the seed that is within Darth Vader that makes him Darth Vader is the same seed within him. And he's got to confront and deal with those things. We've kind of danced around it, but if you're like, I don't want any spoilers. Okay, bless you. Fast forward. But the end of this movie is Darth Vader says to Luke, I'm your father. You always heard that I killed your father. I'm your dad. Well, that moment right there is so crazy powerful because it sends everything in a different direction and it makes Luke start to go, wait, the bad guy is my father? I've got to deal with a family lineage thing here. And again, that sets it up for Return of the Jedi.
I got to throw this in. I know I'm going back to craft real quick here, but I read that okay, it was clear in A New Hope, the original Star Wars, that there was a plant here about Luke's relationship with Darth Vader. There was something there. Now it pays off here at the end of Return of Jedi. And I always asked myself, how much of this story was cooked in George Lucas's mind? I read that it was after Lee Brackett died that George took the time to plot out at least the structure of the full series. I find that interesting. I don't know if he was going to set up a world and then find somebody like Lee Brackett that kind of understands space operas and stories. Why don't you flesh out where this goes from here? And I just think that's interesting because kind of the myth is that George Lucas had the whole Star Wars, everything in his mind before he made the first movie, which certainly is not true.
He had drafts of law, but he chunked that. There were so many changes. I read once that the original Star Wars trilogy is about children rescuing their parents. And the hope was that the follow-up series, the ones that came after it, was going to be the opposite, was going to be parents rescuing their children because of Han and Leia and their son, Kylo Ren. Didn't really quite pay off, maybe to some degree, but I think that's an interesting idea, that children rescuing their parents. So let's talk about family fit.
Please.
There are some moments that you got to watch out for. There's a special effects moment. My daughter turned away. They cut open a tauntaun, which is this camel type animal in the
space ice camel.
Yeah, it's kind of bleh, gross. The guts come out.
It's great.
It is cool. It actually is pretty cool.
Because not only, I got to comment on that moment, having just watched it again, they did something where it kind of looks like intestines, but it's space intestines. It doesn't look like a normal animal. It's fascinating.
Yes. It's all a certain color. It's like colorless, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's that. There is some, you know, there's a Wampa ice creature who attacks Luke, who can feel dangerous. He gets his arm cut off.
Please let me make another nerdy comment. You notice this with the Wampa. So we see the Wampa eating some dead animal. Strangely acted as he eats this animal.
Squatting.
What I thought of was Lucas believes, and he's not wrong. You see this with Jabba the Hutt in the third movie. You see it elsewhere. George Lucas understands that if we make things wet and snotty, they're disgusting.
He's right.
So he adds like this snot stuff to like the Wampa's like eating something. And apparently it's like, are you eating boiled okra? What's going on there? There's a lot of strands going to happen in there.
Only you would make a boiled okra reference.
What other food is like that?
Intestines.
Melted cheese, I suppose.
Queso.
Yeah. Okay. Queso.
Yeah. So there's some violent spots. Luke gets his hand cut off, which you're like, wait a minute, what? It's real fast. You don't see anything weird. I've always made the comment. The good thing about a lightsaber injury is that it's self-cauterizing, so it's not going to bleed.
Nice and clean.
Yeah, nice and clean. It burns it, and he's going to be fine. So there are some challenging moments there. The romance is, you know, it's a little nothing terrible. It's all fine. The language is, you know, TV language. There might be an H or a D kind of thing, but nothing. There's one weird moment. I turned to my daughter. I was like, that was a little aggressive. Han Solo, he's being told on Hoth, don't go out there. Your tauntaun will freeze. And he says, then I'll see you in hell. And I'm sure the guy who warned him was like, I was just
trying to warn you about what the tauntaun can take. Like, are we enemies now? What?
I realize you have agency. You're gonna decide on your own. It's my job to let you know.
Yeah. And the guy might have been thinking to himself, and I've put my faith in Christ. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to see you if you go to hell, Han.
There's a deleted scene where as Han is leaving, that guy hands him a Chick Track.
Just something to consider. Oh, I've lost him. Okay.
Maybe forever. Family fit also, you got to talk with him about some of the Yoda stuff. I know we talked about this last time with Star Wars. The idea of the Force, like I don't think some 8-year-old's going to go, can we start believing in the Force now?
Right.
Nobody's that dumb. But you do have to watch out for some sort of kind of spiritual nonsense.
Am I the only one in the world that after seeing this movie, I would stare across the room and try to bring the box of cereal over to me? I mean, I tried, right?
Did it work?
And I could never even get it to wobble. It just didn't work for me.
Isn't it great when Luke is trying to get the lightsaber and it wobbles and you're like,
yes, so exciting.
You're so close. It's there. And then he shoots up at him. So watch out for some of those things. But there's such good role models here. Han Solo he's going to give his life here or to some degree. Luke is as bullheaded as he is. He's trying to do the right thing. He's trying to help his friends. There's even a nice little message where there's even redemption for him after he's made a bad decision. He's at the end of his rope. He's hanging off an aerial and he calls out to Ben and somehow it's like, look, yeah, you made a bad mistake, but the Force talks to Leia and she comes back and rescues him. So all is not lost. And at the end, we said this about the original Star Wars. These movies are about friendships and about friends looking out for each other. The cliffhanger at the end doesn't so much feel like, my dad is the bad guy. The cliffhanger feels more like Luke and Leia and the droids going, are we going to get our friend Han Solo back?
Right.
We love that guy.
We'll get all our friends back.
And isn't it nice? So in the first movie, Han and Luke are like this. And right away in the second movie, they're pals.
Yes.
Han's the older brother who's like, hey, now you owe me two, kid. Like,
yeah,
they've got a great relationship.
Yes.
So anything to add about The Empire Strikes Back?
No, I think you hit it on the head, which is it is a little more intense than the kind of fun of the first one. There are more mature themes. We're getting into like the fight against yourself and your problematic relationship with one's father. It's certainly there. If you're the right age and you can take Tauntaun guts, we think that the positive messages easily overwhelm any negative vibes you'd have anywhere along the way.
Yes, exactly. There's such a fun little cookie trail that goes through this movie, which is these guys in the Empire, I'm going to please Darth Vader, and he screws up and he dies. And then the next guy gets a promotion, and then he messes up. And the end of it is the third guy going, I think I got, oh, I've messed up too. It's such a funny little, I think it's meant to be comedic, and it actually works. You're like, oh yeah, these bad guys.
Interesting.
They're getting knocked down. So we're going to wrap up The Empire Strikes Back. By the way, after our little wrap up, we're going to have a little bonus, super nerdy discussion between Steven and I about something Empire Strikes Back. But if that's not interesting to you, Empire Strikes Back. We recommend this movie for families with kids, maybe 9, 10 years old. 9 might be the low end. It's a great discussion point. It's fun. It's exciting. It's got so many fun things in it, but it's also great discussion points about mentorship, about youth, about going off half-cocked, about how you deal with things in community, and about friendship. We recommend Empire Strikes Back. So there you go.
See you next time.
Wait. Hang on.
We're back.
Okay, so. Now, I saw this movie in the theater in 1980. Of course, I didn't notice this. I didn't notice this until it was pointed out maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. So towards the climax of the movie, the good guys are on Cloud City, which is this white, pristine industrial city. And everyone's got to evacuate. Lando Calrissian goes, everybody got to get out of here. So you see all the inhabitants running out. They're not panicking. They're just leaving. Well, one guy, and some people caught this somehow, and it got on the internet. Like, look at this. One guy
caught everything that there is to catch about Star Wars.
That's
because
true.
The fans are so absolutely committed that everything there is to know, they know.
They want to know the backstory on the guy who built the gate at Jabba's palace. Okay, so anyway, so during this Cloud City evacuation, this one guy comes running around the corner, and he's in like an orange jumpsuit, and he's holding some device, which you're like, okay. And then he runs by, and he's gone. It lasts for about 2, maybe 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Well, clearly the production designer's like, what do we have someone carry? They were trying to find anything that they could make look different. So people would go, yeah, whatever. It's a space thing. I don't know.
It's a battery of some kind.
Yeah. Well, clearly what they did was they took an old-fashioned, at the time, probably not old-fashioned, homemade ice cream maker. It's about this big, like a tub.
The thing that cranks with the paddles on it.
Yeah. Got a crank, and the top has this circle. So imagine this African-American man in an orange jumpsuit comes running around a corner holding a homemade ice cream maker going by. Well, of course, internet nerd world goes nuts, and they want to know, who is this guy? And I don't know how they ended up naming this guy. I don't know if it got to Lucas's desk and Lucas went, so fandom has named this guy, or Lucas has named this guy, Willrow Hood. And they've made a whole backstory about this guy. And if you go to some sort of Star Wars convention, you know, there's people dressed like stormtroopers. There's a guy like Luke. There's a Mandalorian guy. There will always be guys dressed like Willrow Hood holding an old-fashioned ice cream maker painted white in an orange jumpsuit. It is such a hilarious moment.
Willrow. That reminds me of like Franklin from Peanuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Willow sounds like one of the guys in the back row of the Sweat Hogs classroom.
Yes. A studious guy who sometimes wears a bow tie. Will
he might. Rowe. He's learning things. Now, to get ultra nerdy, on the Mandalorian TV show, the Star Wars TV show, they ended up bringing that thing back, which I thought was pretty clever. And they could have done anything with it. Well, it's a very secure thing to hold valuables in. And so they work it into the plot.
Like a safe.
And when, yeah, it's a portable safe. And so when they bring it in, you're like, now that's why Wilrow would be so committed
so
to this.
With this particular ice cream maker.
Could have his grandfather's ashes in it. Could have the family recipe for, you know, cookies and cream. We don't know what's in there.
We're just lucky that as Wilrow was running across camera, he didn't pause, look at the camera and go like,
what are you going to do?
It paid. It was one day's worth of work. I don't know. And then just kept running.
Star Wars, when they're making these, this is what's so fun is creativity. They're like, grab yes. that. And we'll use this. I remember when I was a kid, I was fascinated with any sort of, you know, it was Star Wars mania when I was a
yes.
kid. And so anytime they would put anything on TV to connect Star Wars, I was in, especially behind the scenes things. And I remember yes. watching a special. Ben Burtt was the sound designer, I think.
Yes.
Ben Burtt. And I remember the sound of the ping, ping of the laser cannon shooting out of X-Wing fighters. They were basically the guy wires on electrical poles, and they had a metal hammer, and they hit it and went, and you're watching this going, they didn't hardly change that sound at all. That's the sound. Now, nowadays you make something, I'll just pull it up on the computer. They were recording lions at the zoo and combining it with a monkey sound and all this. And okay, now that we got Chewbacca sound.
It's crazy.
So fun.
Yeah.
Endless creativity. There you go. Wilrow Hood. I'll tell you this. If you send a photo of you or your child dressed like Wilrow Hood going out for Halloween Whoa. Or some sort of thing, Steven and I will send you some sort of signed Star Wars memorabilia
wow.
signed by us. There you go.
Incredible. So you would give Empire Strikes Back 5 out of 5 ice cream makers?
5 out of 5 ice cream makers. That's right.
3, 2, 1, 0.
Thanks for listening to Rocket Pop Reviews. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with your friends. See you next time for another family-friendly review.